The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Hey, everybody, David here. Before we get into the creator podcast that Jean, Alicia, and I recorded back in October, right when the film was released in the theaters, this podcast got delayed in editing and we were just never getting around to it. And then it turns out that it's going to be released on the 20th of December for streaming. And we thought, oh, perfect timing. We'll get the podcast finished up and out to you just in time for you to check it out over the holidays. So, hope you enjoy the podcast. Welcome to One Shots, where the Lorehounds, your guides to sci-fi family road trips. I'm David.
And I'm Jean.
And I'm Alicia, and this is our coverage of the 2023 Gareth Edwards film, The Creator.
In this podcast, we're going to have a full conversation about the movie, starting with our spoiler-free hot takes and notes about the production.
And after a short break, we'll unlock the full spoiler code as we review the plot and story, plus play a fun new game called Spot the Trope, and dig further into the topics and issues that the film brings up.
We will wrap up the podcast with some listener feedback before David fills us in on the upcoming programming schedule for the Lorehounds, Properly Howard, and updates for the Wool Shift Dust podcast by Alicia.
A quick reminder that if you are into what we're doing and you'd like to support us, visit us at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Link in the show notes below. For as little as $3 a month, you can get ad-free versions of all of our podcasts, early access, and a bunch of other exclusive content.
Another way you can help out the podcast is to leave us a rating and review. Apple Podcasts is a great way to help poke the algorithms, which help with our visibility on the interwebs.
Or something like that, yes.
If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us or use the contact page on our website. We have a contact form and a voicemail feature. Send emails to lorehounds@thelorehounds.com. Any feedback we get for the creator, we will drop in our next Lorehounds One Shot podcast. Also, join us on our Discord server. We have a fun and welcoming community, and we have channels set up for all the different shows and projects that we have going on. Find those links in the show notes.
All right. Well, One Shots. This is our one-off podcast for shows and movies, even books. I mean, anything that we want to talk about, where folks in our Lorehounds extended family, we can get together and talk about something. So I think this is the first time the three of us have done a one-shot. It feels like we were just on the, were just on the podcast for Loki.
That's true. But this is our first one shot.
Yeah, it might be. Yeah.
Cool.
I think my last one was with Jean and John.
That's right.
Yes, that's right.
I think November and December too, there's a bunch of movies and one-off projects that we don't have any big marquee shows. And so I think we're going to end up doing a bunch of more of the one shots to sort of fill out the schedule. So
the Marvels.
Yeah. Well, they're definitely doing the Marvels. Yeah. Like that's a one-off MCU. As we don't have like a Foundation or, Ahsoka or something like that. So, okay. For this episode, our spoiler-free hot takes are going to lead us off, and then we're going to do a little trailer talk. I don't know if anybody saw any good trailers, and we can chit chat about some production stuff, all spoiler-free. We'll take a break and then we'll unlock the codes. We'll get in. We'll start walking the bombs down the pathway to, detonate our opinions about the show. We'll talk about the story, the plot. We'll play Spot the Trope, and then we'll talk about some topics and feedback. And we'll get into it. So I don't know. I was thinking about this for one shot movies or even TV shows. Do you guys think we should have a ranking system, or should we just like leave it loose and have fun with conversations? Ooh. 'Cause if other people are doing one shots, do we have like a kind of a overall meta ranking, or just, you know, do we need more rankings?
I love ranking.
Okay.
So, yeah. I mean, but then about like just grading individual movies, or we come back later and like rank the movies we've discussed?
Yeah, you know, that's what I'm saying. I don't know. Anthony and I did I think we'd have to separate out movies and TVs. And I think Anthony and I earlier this year did the Wes Anderson film. I don't know. Have we done any other one-shots for movies this year? I can't remember. I think we're definitely have some more, because we're going to have, what's the Zack Snyder Star Wars thing that's coming in December?
Rebel Moon.
Yeah. That's kind of going to fit into that. Yeah. I mean, there's the Napoleon movie. I don't know. I didn't know if that was something we wanted to try to mess around with, because then we'd have to get everybody, you know, that we do one shots with sort of into the same system.
Yeah. We still didn't do Barbenheimer, but I can rate them too.
Gosh, I know. And I finally saw Barbie, but I still haven't seen Oppenheimer.
I haven't seen Oppenheimer.
Everybody see Barbie? I think Marilyn
did
wants
to see Barbie. Yeah, Marilyn. Well, Marilyn was also, she was a collector back in the day. So I was a collector in like the 80s, 90s, and she was a collector in like, I think she said the 60s.
Very cool. Wow.
And I know John has seen it. So we got to see. Yeah. It was just hard this summer, the scheduling and everything.
Yeah, now it got crazy
in the world. So, well, we should think about it. We should think about a ranking system, and then maybe chat about it offline and see if we can come up with it. I've been working in the background. I'm trying to create a new Patreon benefit thing of a show tracking system, you know, with a Gantt chart so that we can see when shows are coming, but then maybe have some sort of aspect for Patreon subscribers that we could have community rankings, you know, so that we, it was kind of compiling. I've got found a new website too that will calendar entries, so you could subscribe to a calendar and you could see the show times pop up in your calendar and stuff. So kind of trying to pull all that together. It's slow going. Side hustle.
You are like the master of spreadsheets.
Although John is quickly overtaking me, because his real life job has a lot to do with spreadsheets.
So. Yeah.
I do enjoy a good spreadsheet. Google Sheets is,
I have, you know, all respect for it. Like, I've just, you are impressive. I enjoy a spreadsheet, but you inspire me to, you know, to strive for new levels.
I'm not into formulas and things like that. That's a whole other level. Like, there's a whole other level going on there. Well, maybe we should talk about the movie, given that we're 7 minutes into this podcast. Let's lead it off with Jean, spoiler-free hot take. Where are you on the creator?
I liked the movie.
You liked the movie?
I did.
Okay.
I'm a sucker.
Not going to lie.
Yeah, I liked the movie. I like John David Washington.
So he was great.
Yeah.
He was really awesome. And I think that's the main reason why I liked the movie. I think he pulled me into his character. Uh-huh. And I was really open. I don't normally go in wanting happy ending, but I kind of wanted a happy ending.
Okay.
Do you feel it was a happy ending or no? Where do you think it fell?
You know, when I first watched it, before I thought about it, I almost had a tear, but then I caught myself and said, no, we're not going to cry. Get back upside. Get back inside my head. No tears will be dropped. It was very sad in the moment. Mm-hmm. But when I look back on it, I kind of think it was the best possible ending.
Yeah.
That could have happened, especially for Alfie, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm still 50-50 on happy, sad, but I'm kind of almost leaning towards best possible, like Candide-ish. The best possible of all worlds, right? And I think that's where the movie has.
Right.
Cool. So would you recommend it to somebody?
Yes, I would.
Okay.
Yes. I don't think anyone, it's not something that I would tell you, go right now and go buy a ticket and watch The Creator. Uh-huh. But given what we've had this past year, if you told me, hey, I think I'm going to go check out The Creator, I'm going to be like, I think you should.
Okay. Would you pay full ticket price, or would you tell somebody to wait for streaming?
I would tell them to pay full ticket price, because visually it's stunning.
Right. You want the big screen. Right. Mm. Matinee or full price?
I'm a matinee.
Do they even do matinees anymore?
Some places.
They do here.
All right.
Some places. I'm a matinee guy. If you can get in for cheap, whatever the movie is, get in for cheap.
Right.
So you'll get your popcorn, get your, you know, your water. If it's a 12 o'clock matinee, 11:30, do it.
Right.
But definitely I would tell somebody. If they were, I wouldn't say, hey, go see this. But if someone was saying, I'm thinking about seeing it, like, yeah, I think you'll enjoy it.
All right. Alicia, thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, if you take this movie apart aspect by aspect, I think most of it was just superlatively great. However, the one thing that it really fumbled for me is the most important thing, which is the writing.
Okay.
But, you know, to touch on the good stuff, the visuals, indeed, like, they make it worth seeing. I almost never see movies in the Dolby Theater because it costs more. But it just so happened that, like, timing-wise, it worked out the best. So, and I was really glad that I did, not just because of that, but also because of the sound. I just shared a Mashable article with you guys, an interview with the director, and he was talking also about how the sound, yeah, it was very carefully crafted to evoke an emotional response. And that was very effective and cool. The cast was great. The acting was great across the board. No weak acting anywhere. But yeah, the writing, the plot was transparent. There were nods to a lot of themes, but like the exploration of them was very shallow. And so it was frustrating that it wasn't living up to, it looks like this A++ movie. And it wasn't quite living up to that. I thought it was going to be something like Neil Blomkamp's, one of my favorite directors.
Yes. And I thought it totally had that vibe, right?
I thought it was going to be something like his District 9, but it was more like something like his Elysium, which is the movie I wanted to like because it has my name and Jodie Foster. But it was clear that like the studios just interfered too much and it became an empty shell of his other movies. And this is what this felt like. Just a beautiful, beautiful, I want all the stills as posters, but yeah, we'll talk more about the plot.
Can I call you out your note here that I saw that you have on the end of your thing here that Edwards needed Gilroy on the writing side? I like that.
Yes. Yes. That would have been these two. I mean, I know he has another partner who he works with, but I think these two, like, they made Rogue One together, and I would have loved to have seen, you know, Andor level scripting with everything that this movie did have going for it, which is a lot.
Garth, visuals. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
David?
Yeah. I was profoundly disappointed in this movie. I went in, I went in with high expectations. I loved the trailer. I loved the visual look, just like you were saying, Alicia, with District 9 and Elysium. Like, those are, it really was fitting into that visual style. And so I was super excited. The trailers and the still shots coming out, the way that the AI and the robots looked, that looked really interesting and innovative. The name of the lead actor,
John David Washington.
Right. Sorry. He's great. I enjoy him in stuff a lot. And so I was really looking forward to this. And I saw the plot in the first opening scene. I knew exactly, Farkin alert. I knew exactly, not exactly. I had strong suspicions about what was going to happen in the story. And then I just kind of had to sit there through the rest of the movie, watching it unfold and watching a lot of overblown tropes around, you know, military and you know, special forces, and you know one of the ones that gets me all the time is if like people are sneaking around and somebody holds up a fist to indicate to like stop the line, you know, or the general with the big glasses and the big hat, you know, stomping around, rah rah rah. It just got painful for me at that point. Cause again, I got disinvested in the story. And we talked about this in our Wheel of Time coverage, our season wrap up. it's noticeable that if you are disinvested in the plot, you're going to start picking the, you're going to start picking more nits.
Right.
And be it visuals, be it plotting, be it script, be it acting, whatever it is, you're just going to, you know, be there. So
which
that was
for,
me
just for the record, I did not feel about the Wheel of Time, just saying. Just in case anyone doesn't listen to that coverage. Wheel of Time is good. Any confusion. Watch it.
So yeah, I was really disappointed. Visually, it's gorgeous, and I was really hoping to see something from Gareth Edwards that wasn't a, you know, thing where somebody else was brought in, stepped in, however Rogue One went down. I was really excited to see, you know, his vision. And from what I've seen and read about the production, it sounded like they did a real guerrilla style and they had a lot of fun shooting it. And yeah, I was disappointed. I was profoundly disappointed. So
yeah, I mean, the shooting it part was great. That's not the problem. Yeah.
I loved the way that they flipped it in terms of where the action was taking place on the world, on our Earth, and highlighting some, you know, different places and some different political interactions. The world that they constructed made a lot of sense. So it was all, everything around it was great. It, and then the writing and the basic plot just was not there for me. So,
okay.
That's the way it is.
That's how it is.
Yeah, and I mean, I think there's some great stuff to talk about the show, and I think I'm hopeful that this is going to be one of those productions that moves the needle a little bit in terms of how films get shot or what is available for people to make and opening up the space a little bit, because it sounds like they did it in a really interesting way. But let's get into production stuff in a little bit. Just before we switch over there, trailer talk. Did you guys get any trailers at all? I got no trailers in my showing. Yeah. I was in an empty movie theater. I was at our local little movie theater. It was a Sunday night at a 9 o'clock showing. It was in one of the medium sized theaters that we rooms that they have. And it was empty. It was just me and no trailers. And they just fired it up and that was it. So. Wow.
Nothing interesting for me.
No nothing trailers interesting? For you?
No nothing trailers. Interesting. Nothing interesting. Okay. Yeah. I have a tendency to get to the movie theater at the last second. I know how to time it. So I tend to walk in as the last trailer's playing. So nice. I'm not really
That's
sure.
That's a skill. That's a skill.
It's always, this theater's predictable. It's always about 10 minutes. But I don't know exactly what they played, but I do have to say my experience was completely different because I did watch it opening night in the Dolby Theater. Okay. So nice, it was sold out.
Wow. What was the vibe of the wow. audience?
One thing that happened was some drunk young men showed up and the usher almost didn't let them in, but somehow they ended up talking their way. And I'm like, cause I saw them out front when I was ticketing.
Right.
And so they came in and of course they were sitting right behind me.
Of course.
Oh, no.
And there was like a big group of them and they were obnoxious for like a couple of minutes and then they fell really silent. And then they just like kind of shuffled out halfway through.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, we can't take anything that they do
indicative. But I think it was generally, you know, a more subdued audience.
Okay.
Okay.
Maybe if it had been a bit more of a ripper, they probably, like an Aliens-esque energy, they probably would have stuck around. But there was
I think it was more grounded than I thought it was going to be.
Right. Mm.
It wasn't as fantastical as these stories tend to get.
Right.
Right. So they told it a really grounded story for me. And again, to both of your points, like the acting in this was really, I thought they were great.
Right. But I
went into it not thinking it was going to be like this grand adventure.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I was happy that it wasn't. I was happy it wasn't Terminator.
Okay.
Type of explosive sets from the get-go. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. We could talk about that a bit later. But yeah, okay. I was generally happy with it having a more grounded tale, a story that, you know, is kind of believable given the times that we.
Yeah, it was. I think the phrase grounded is applicable to what we're talking about here. Yeah, it wasn't high fantasy is not the right word for it, but the fate of the world wasn't at stakes here. Evil Sauron or whatever. Yeah. It was political in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it was about genocide.
It wasn't Skynet, coming to eradicate all mankind.
Yeah.
Right.
And I thought that was a good way to tell an AI robot story that doesn't involve, you know, the future of mankind being in peril.
Right. Mm.
So I thought that was a really cool twist on the side.
Well, we can talk about that when we get later in the topics and stuff. Let's kick the ball around a little bit about production. The director and writers, Gareth Edwards, who did Rogue One and Monsters, which was in 2010. So it doesn't feel like he's done a lot. Do you know a lot?
Yeah, I haven't.
Alicia, about his career?
I mean, he's done other movies, but those are the two kind of biggest ones. Monsters was his breakout as an indie horror movie. I don't know if anyone... I actually remember it vividly, oddly enough, but it's about there's like a plague takes over the world to create monsters and these people get stuck in Mexico and are trying to get back to the States. And anyway, it was a decent movie. And then, of course, Rogue One, there's a controversy where Tony Gilroy basically took over and we don't know how much was Gareth Edwards and Chris Weitz and how much of the final product was Gilroy. But then you see Andor and you're like, that's looking very Gilroy. Like
Gilroy.
And Chris Weitz, he's a frequent partner.
So they co-wrote. So Gareth Edwards and Chris Weitz co-wrote this and Gareth directed it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. They partnered together a lot.
Right.
But yeah, Chris Weitz, his early career is, you know, kind of very lighthearted comedies like Ants, American Pie, About a Boy. And then maybe reasons why I don't trust him with a script is, I don't know if you guys know the Golden Compass adaptation that came out with like Nicole Kidman and version. His Dark Materials on HBO, watch that TV series. Yeah. That's the good adaptation.
Okay.
But he did the bad one. Yeah. And also the bad adaptation of Pinocchio that came out last year that was nominated. He was nominated for a Razzie for it.
But
he did also do the pretty good Kenneth Branagh directed Cinderella from 2015. And so we'll see. Next year he has a horror movie coming out from Blumhouse called They Listen.
Okay.
And that's all him. Like, it's his baby. So we'll really see what he can do on his own.
Okay.
He's getting a lot of at bats, but not a lot of good hits. Okay. So the casting was pretty good. I mean, John David Washington, Gemma Chan. I'm not sure how to pronounce her first name.
I say Gemma.
I haven't seen her before, so I didn't recognize her.
She's in a lot of stuff. She's also has two roles in Marvel, including, did you see Eternals?
No.
He hasn't seen it.
I did not. What is Crazy Rich Asians, Eternals, the Creator, Humans, don't worry, Captain Humans Marvel. She's coming up in Captain Marvel.
Yeah, she was one of the Kree. So she was blue in that one.
Okay. All right. Cool. She's got some solid credits here. So that's cool. I guess I just didn't recognize her without Kree makeup on, though. Ken Watanabe. I love that guy. He could read the phone book and I'd be enthralled with him. But I don't feel like I got enough of him. Mm. He was just sort of this element that came in and out. And was it a core story?
Agree with that.
Allison Janney. She did a great job, but I didn't really buy her. Well, I mean, is that a good job? I don't know. I mean, she was acting.
Well, I just think the character was kind of paper thin.
Yeah.
She wasn't given much to do.
Yeah.
Very mustache twirling.
Yeah. Mm. Just be the villain that we all want you to hate.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
She did well at it. I'm Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, I mean, she was acting. She was putting putting herself into it. That is for sure. Yeah. But yeah, I don't think there was any dimensionality to the character. Amar Chanda Patel.
He's probably best known for the Willow TV show. R.I.P. May it rise again for two more seasons. And he was in the first season of Wheel of Time, but then he left to do the Willow role. So,
oh no!
Oh, wow.
Oh no!
he was the original Ingtar.
Wow, he would have been a good Ingtar.
Yeah,
he been good.
Yeah. So.
Again, this was weird because he was in it, but then he wasn't, right?
The thing is, because I recognized him, as soon as we saw that first replicant with his face die, I'm like, oh no, they're not done with him. And then another face of his pops up. And I'm like, ah.
And then we've got Madeline Unavoyles.
Kudos to her.
Yeah, so this was her first movie, and she was 7 years old while filming this.
Wow.
She was awesome.
Yeah, she was incredible.
She was awesome.
A lot of presence on screen.
She has a future. Yeah, she has a future in this game of acting.
And then it looks like we had Danny McBride as
the cast was just I think a lot more people that a lot more names that people would recognize.
Right. Yeah, there were a lot of little bit parts for folks. So it was a deep cast given what they did. Mm-hmm. And then for filming and the visual effects, we got an email about this from Shane, but so what they were basically shooting with a single camera and just running it guerrilla style and running around to all different parts of the world somehow. Did anybody read more about this?
I didn't.
I mean, I don't know. They in that Mashable article that I shared, they were telling crazy stories also about them kind of like they were trying to film reference footage by Area 51, not necessarily for this, for something else. And then they ended up getting chased out by these grids of lights. And that's what inspired the lights on the Nomad ships.
Okay. Wow. You mean we're still in spoiler free, so we don't want to blow anything up here. That's very cool. It's cool. It's a great story from a filmmaker, from a run and gun style filmmaker. But we'll read that email later. But basically, they had a mostly shot on a single camera and in for a lot of stuff. I guess some other stuff they did they had some other cameras, but they kept it really simple and kept it fast and lean, which given the sumptuousness of the sets, places they were, it was incredible what they accomplished. And then they just shot the hell out of it and then took it all back and then did all the VFX in post and kept it real simple. So they didn't do a lot of green screen stuff and weird suit things. I don't know how anybody get the numbers on how well it did at the box office.
Disappointing.
Yeah.
I mean, it should have done better, even though I'm not happy about the writing, it should have done better than it did. So
looks like had a $80 million budget and a box office of 63.9. So
So you have to wonder how much is, the actors can't promote.
That's true. That's a good point.
How much is just like general movie fatigue? I mean, I don't want to believe that it needs to be a major franchise to get people to the theater. But then again, it ended up getting kind of tepid reviews because of the writing. So
right.
Let's see what's on Rotten Tomatoes. 67 with an audience score of 76. So the audience liked it more than the critics. That makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense. And I think that has a lot to do with the good cast and the visual effects that they were sold. So
I think it's going to stream well.
Okay.
I think once people can sit down and watch it in their home, whichever.
Someone was just saying that to me today. I watched Oblivion because I'd seen it compared to this movie.
Really?
And I'll just say the comparison's quite apt.
Did you put it in your spot the tropes list?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Excellent. Okay, good. Okay.
But yeah, so I was talking to, I didn't enjoy Oblivion. It made me appreciate the creator more. And my friend was saying I just like the pretty pictures. I'm like, oh, then definitely go see the creator. And he's like, when it comes out in streaming.
There you go.
There you go.
Yeah, I think it'll be a good streaming film because it sets itself up as a complex plot, but it's not. And I think it's an easy watch and you could just sit back and enjoy it.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, we will get into the plot and story and start breaking things down and see where that takes us. So we'll be right back.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
All right, and we're back. Okay, here's our spoiler warning. We're going to start getting into the plot and storyline. We're going to play Spot the Trope, and then we'll start talking about some of the topics and issues that the movie brings up before we get into a little bit of feedback. Here's a synopsis that I got off of a Google search. The AIs helped me synopsize the AI movie. As a future war between the human race and artificial intelligence rages on, ex-Special Forces agent Joshua is recruited to hunt down and kill the creator, the elusive architect of advanced AI. The creator has developed a mysterious weapon that has the power to end the war of all mankind. As Joshua and his team of elite operatives venture into enemy-occupied territory, they soon discover the world-ending weapon is actually an AI in the form of a young child. Right. Alicia, how are you with this plot? Did you find this plot interesting, compelling? Did it take you anywhere? Did it do anything interesting for you?
The skeleton of it is okay, mm-hmm. predictable enough. But yeah, the problem was just in all of the details of the, you know, they just leaned time after time on what is the easy tropey answer to, you know, why is he, does he hate them? Because, you know, because there was a bombing when he was a child. I don't know. And they ignore things like, you know, the fact that when you live with a community like that for, mm-hmm. I don't know how long he lived with them when he was getting to know his wife, that has got to have an effect on the way you see things. And they don't touch on that at all. They just completely ignore that. Like, apparently he was just being fake to them and hating them the whole time, which doesn't make him very likable as a character.
That's a good point. I did like the idea that they built in the world of these communities that are living together quite in a quite integrated way. But yeah, they didn't deal with much of that at all. Jean, the basic plot for you, how did it...
It was fine. Here's my thing. It's a brand new IP, right?
Mm-hmm. Are you expecting more out of this world?
No, not with this movie.
Okay.
I'm just expecting the groundwork of this world.
If they took this world and did more storytelling in it, I would watch it.
So would I.
For sure.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
would I.
Yeah, I would definitely be curious. Yeah.
I would definitely watch it. But I think the building blocks are there.
But somebody else can write it.
Yes. I don't have a problem with somebody else writing. But I do think that the building blocks, the structure that they've laid down, the foundation that they've laid down, is something that I'd be interested in seeing built out.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's a house that I would like to visit when the house is being constructed. So I can see what the interior design is going to be like. Like I'm big on HGTV. I like watching that stuff. I like to see how houses are built. I would watch how this house was built, and I would like to see the finished big reveal of the product.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I was okay. I don't think I went into it with, again, grand expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from, I really wanted it to work. Because I really want new IPs
right.
to be out there.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like what Alicia said. my fear is I don't want folks to only go to cinema to watch things that they know about.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I want to be able to go to a movie that I don't know. Right. I don't know these characters. I don't know this world. Pull me in. It's not from a book. It's not from a comic. It's not from a movie that was done, you know, 70 years ago. This is something totally brand new. And for that, I was okay with the plot. Was it then? Absolutely. Yeah, it was. You know, I can point back to, I want to give it a chance to breathe. Like, I'm going to watch this movie again. Uh-huh. Like, when it comes out on streaming, I'm going to watch it again. And I want to see if I feel anything different from when I watched it the first time, because I'm definitely going to see it again. So that's where I'm at.
Okay. For me, the plot just fell apart in the first 5 minutes. It was obvious that Maya was the person that they were after, and that, you know, her pregnancy was related to the AI. And even though it wasn't a one-to-one, it was a, you know, it puts John David Washington into the position of being a parent. It was right there on screen. I wasn't trying to, you know, figure out what the plot was. I was ready just to go for it. And then I was like, oh. And then the rest of the movie, the plot, the twists, the turns of the story, the fact that it was an AI kid that has magic powers that can just, you know, stick his hand out, stick their hand out and turn off things. Stick our hands together. It's been a minute since we saw the movie.
There are levels to this, David. She's put her hands together in prayer, bro. This AI is praying to the Lord to turn off the machine.
Turn off the machine.
Think about it. This is a deep dive.
I have some questions about how technology works. Like the other time, the character's checking what is up in her head and just kind of sticks, like, I don't know, the creator equivalent of a sonic screwdriver into the gap in her head. And then is like, ooh, this is advanced tech.
Right.
What are you reading? What are you doing?
What is all this circuitry about? What is going on? These wires.
Yeah. You know? It looked cool as hell.
A positron brain. A positron brain. What is this? I'm cool with all of that because this is a new thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
It's not going to be fleshed out in the way that a second or third potential, you know, go at this world would probably be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these are questions that you're going to have. Like, okay, why is this way? Maybe they don't have the answers for that in this movie. But was it worth my 2 hours and change to watch it? Yeah, I said, for me it was. Given the thinness and everything, because I'm not disagreeing with you guys on the plot.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm not disagreeing with it. But I'm just okay with it.
Alpha Omega. Alpha O is what they called it. I was just put my hands in my face and I was just like, oh, really? We're doing that? We're not calling it Alpha Omega. We're not calling it AO. We're calling it Alpha O. What is that? I just did not understand the, it was so thin. I'm sorry.
So can I tell you what, you know, you've got me thinking about if there were more films in this world. And so I thought of a film that I would like to see in this world.
Okay.
I would like to see, because I thought it was cool, just like they had this concept, like the rough sketches of the world were cool. You know, they mm-hmm. have something called New Asia. They never explain
what that is or how
it came to be or why everyone seems to be able to understand every Asian language. But so I would like to see that. That would be like, I would like an origin film and I would like it written by Asian writers.
Yes, yes. Absolutely.
And you know, have Gareth Edwards do the cool camera stuff and get the VFX team back that did this because that was all great. Get the cast back.
Plurkin.
I think that would be a fleshed out world would be really, really a good thing to try to do. We'll probably never see it, but that would be a great start.
Yeah, I think that's disappointing too, because if I knew that this was part of some sort of startup of a franchise, I may, like you, Jean, given it a little bit more latitude and let them build the world for me and go, okay, yeah, you know, simplified plot. And I get what's supposed to be engaging about the plot. It just feels like I've seen this movie over and over again. You know, I've seen parts of this movie and other things. It just didn't feel like they gave the script any depth or complexity to it.
Agreed.
But yeah, the world was fascinating. Did the twist that the AI that the nuclear detonation in LA, that it was a coding error, did that surprise you guys at all? Did that do anything for you, Alicia?
I mean, it was very predictable. And you know what did it for me more was seeing when they were at the beginning of the movie, you know, he was on a cleanup crew in this area.
Right.
And they discovered an AI person who was just crying and calling out for his wife or something. And the partner who was there with him on the cleanup crew was just like really emotionally affected by it. That for me was one of the most emotionally affecting moments. Finding out the twist, the thing that made me like it better was I just think about it as like a 1984 tribute, you know, where the government's always telling you that you're being bombed by the enemy just to keep you in line.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I agree with that. I think, I knew the twist. I knew there was something that was not being said, that they were not responsible for the bombing.
Right.
Like, nah, they didn't do this. I don't know how they're going to say they didn't do it, but they didn't do it.
Yeah.
I thought the saying that it was a coding error was weird. Just say that they bombed them. You know what I mean? It's not they bombed them. They let loose a nuke for whatever purpose to start this war, baby. You know, I thought that would have been, for me, that would have held more weight than to just simply say it was a coding mistake. It was a mistaken thing.
You know, it didn't do anything for me in terms of like, wow, that's a great twist. But the twist worked for me inside of this story, where this story was at. I didn't have a problem with it relative to everything else in the thing. It made sense in a way.
Right.
And I think you were talking before about how this was a grounded script. This is a very, there is a lot of political stuff in there in terms of like Nomad and the sort of hegemony. Thank you. Hegemony of, you know, the North Americans and it's not even colonialism. It's this sort of security and control thing. We're going to dominate the global space so that we maintain our safety. We're not necessarily going to colonize you or explicitly exploit you, but we're going to not, our security is going to run overshot over your health and well-being. And
go ahead.
I was to say, it's also about like the propaganda to get you fearing the other so that you're obedient and, you know, supporting whoever wants to be in charge.
Yeah.
And also the bombing is very reminiscent of what the US did in Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos.
Sure.
During the 60s and early 70s, the indiscriminate, you know, bombings of cities and villages who hid quote unquote Viet Cong or communists. And this is in the same vein, you know. I think the general even said that we're not at war with the people of New Asia. We're just at war with the terrorists or the people who inflicted the harm on us, which is what we heard in Afghanistan, you know, 20 years ago. So it's, you know, in that vein of American military power being able to, you know, enact this sort of violence on populations indiscriminately. And I thought they captured that very well.
I think we were going to do the spot the trope game, but I think I'm going to kick it down because we're kind of starting to talk about a bunch of the issues that the film brings up, which I think are interesting things, even though maybe the plot wasn't great. The film does bring up a bunch of stuff. And so, you know, this idea of the global politics and AI and robotics. And so as you're talking, Jean, I was thinking about, well, you know, there's a part of this world where people have made peace with and are deeply integrated with AI. And what did they call the were they weren't robots, but were they replicants? It's been a while. Oh. Apologies, listeners. We all saw this movie like a week ago, more than a week ago.
So. More than that.
No, replicants is what they're called in Blade Runner.
Yeah.
I have to find out the word.
Yeah, I forget.
But go ahead with your thought.
Yeah, I just thought it was a really interesting world setup that they gave us. And I, you know, now that we're on the verge of an AI revolution, at least in work and productivity, you know, for white collar work, and who knows how that's going to step down.
Of course, that's already been affecting like factory work and things like that. So,
sure, yeah, we have robotics there, right, which are hard programmed. What happens suddenly if those robot assembly lines have a little bit more AI built into them? I just saw the other day that in the latest update to Microsoft Windows 11. That it's got a bunch of AI built into the operating system to be an assistant to help you with a bunch of stuff. So Clippy is actually getting a brain as opposed to a bunch of, you know, hard-coded responses. So I thought that the film overall brought up this interesting question of what does it mean to be human in a world that looked like that?
Simulant.
Simulant, that's what it was.
They're called simulant.
Thank you. Right.
Okay.
But I think that even draws even a brighter highlighting line underneath this question of what does it mean to be AI? What does it mean to be human? If you're a simulant, right? What is that? You're simulating.
Right.
And they keep saying that in the movie throughout the movie.
They do.
Right?
They do. Yes. Yes. And I think one thing that I will note was that this idea of New Asia and being in harmony with the simulant.
Okay.
As opposed to Western culture, a lot of times in the shots of New Asia, it was very rural, natural.
Yes, right. Mm-hmm.
Like, and I hate that. That's one thing that I hate. I'm sorry. I know we're kicking the tropes down, but I couldn't.
No, it's all right. Yeah. Well,
because it's in line with what we're talking about, right?
Right. It's one
thing that I hate that Western filmmakers do, this romanticized version of the other, right?
Right.
Being in tune with nature and being, you know, more grounded literally.
Right.
You know, as opposed to our highfalutin, high-tech ways that, you know.
Some of the most advanced cityscapes are in Asia right
exactly,
now.
Currently.
Right.
Currently.
Yeah. Right now.
Where they've
and
got
some of the most interesting
this.
Architecture. And
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Some of the cleanest, well-run cities are there. So,
you know, fastest trains that
you know,
can get to Washington and New York in an hour, where it takes Amtrak, you know, four and a half.
Right.
But
it's ridiculous.
That's another thing.
Anyway.
But to be fair, the Americans were also a caricature. So,
that's true. No. Right, with a hard-headed general and Allison Janney's character. Like, yeah.
We're going to kill
really
you
a caricature?
Bang, bang, bang.
Yeah. Is it really a caricature?
Well.
You know, I'm coming from... is it really a caricature, given the history of American foreign policy?
I mean, I think that we're dangerously close. I mean, I don't want to veer into a current political conversation, but I think the U.S. is dangerously close.
Right, right. So I just wish that, you know, some of that would have been taken out of the film, you know, to show the cohesion between folks. I think when they went to, where were they in the city that they... almost caught Joshua.
Was that in the factory?
In the factory. It was The Factory, right?
Okay. I can't remember. It's kind
I think it was The Factory. And it was, you know, it was very dark. You know, it wasn't the city at night almost. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I kind of want different takes by our films on places that are not Western identifiable.
Right.
That's my rant.
Got it. We started to talk about it, but let's talk a little bit more about magic in our science fiction.
I love it.
You loved it. All right.
Yeah. Come on, guys. I love it.
I mean, I think, you know, it was supposed to be science. Like, she just knows how to instinctively
hack into the Wi-Fi and
Get into the firmware get on the wavelength of any machine and get its parts to move, ignite.
I just felt that was one more weak element in the storyline. They didn't explain it all.
Her powers,
It was just this holy ability that, you know, that the AI had created. And they didn't talk about how it arrived there or what it does. It was just given to us as is, kid prays, and things turn off. And yeah.
Do you think that was meant to be seen in a religious light?
I don't know. Jean was always the praise.
I didn't see it that way myself because that's not my framework. But as soon as Jean said it, I'm like, oh, yeah.
Right, I thought it was. Maybe I'm wrong that it was deliberate, but as a, you know, reformed, not even reformed, as a lapsed Catholic, you know, yeah, I thought it was very religious in the way that she turned things off.
I think for me, part of the disappointment was that there was a lot of hard, quote unquote, hard sci-fi in this movie where we've got, you know, we've got robots, we've got simulants, we've got AI, we've got this nomad thing flying around, computer code, whatever. And then, oh, magic, right? You know, don't question it. And it really was a disconnect for me between the two things.
Yeah.
Because I wanted this. The show was dealing in so much hard sci-fi stuff.
I mean, for me, I see it as hand wavy, literally hand wavy.
Literally,
hard sci-fi. But I definitely didn't interpret it as magic. But a cool thing that I wanted to say about Nomad, though, since you mentioned it, is that apparently, you know, we got that. It was one of the most visually striking aspects of the movie.
Totally.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it was a constant throughout the film, right?
Right.
So
right.
We were waiting for it to strike.
A hulking threat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Apparently, it was first going to be a ring around the entire planet.
Okay.
Oh.
And so the ring would just like adjust. But then they decided it would be better to be more mobile like this. So they designed it to look like a bird of prey, which you see like that head and triangular shape. So yeah, I have to give kudos to this. I do think that they took a lot of design cues, as did the film Oblivion from In the Loop. I'll bring that up in the trope section. But
okay. Yeah, it did have a very strong, it gave me a lot of Elysium vibes as well.
Yeah, for better and worse. Elysium looked cool.
I thought it was a great way to visually represent foreign, you know, power, projecting power around the world and reminding everybody who the alpha dog is. We do that with, at least, the United States does that with its fleets and its aircraft carriers.
Right.
You know, if an aircraft carrier shows up somewhere, then you know that, you know, policymakers back in Washington, D.C. are serious about an issue. So I thought it was a really good device. It worked well. And it was constant sort of countdown, like, okay, here it comes right now. The clock is ticking and the hero's got to move because the big lights, the big crosshair lights are coming for you. So it'd be interesting. I have to read the story about what happened when they were at Area 51 and they got lit up by something like that.
I mean, I need more of that story. Like, what were they doing? Like, they just thought that they could sneak up on Area 51 with a camera? Like, I don't know.
Well, as long as they stayed out, I suppose, you know, there's nothing illegal about it. So
many people have tried.
Yeah, they have.
So many people have tried. But I agree.
Let's talk a little bit about the character that John David Washington was playing, Joshua. and this whole thing with Maya and the child. So we're talking about love and surrogacy, grief, and then how that plays into sort of creativity and destruction. I thought the idea that they were playing with about love and surrogacy was really interesting. I remember talking once to a fellow parent whose children are adopted, and he said, "They're mine. I don't care biology or not. Like the moment that we became a family, that was it. I was their parent. End of story," kind of thing. And I thought that was a really interesting way. He was all in, and mm-hmm. it was all encompassing for him, and it had the same sort of profound psychological change that somebody who has a live biological birth, might respond in the same way. We think of, oh, well, hormones flip and, all these kinds of things. And it's like, no, it can be extended beyond that. And it doesn't have to be something that's biological.
But didn't they kind of cheat by making it like an AI version of his actual child? Like that kind of...
Well, but I think that's what was interesting was that they did,
I mean, they're kind of cheap and, because then it's not really, it's not, an adopted child that you learn to love. It's like, oh, wait, no, actually, this is my own child. Right. Yeah.
There are genetics that make Alfie part of him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a way that, it wouldn't have been if she was a simulant. Mm-hmm. Because she's more than a simulant.
Right.
She's more than a simulant because she actually has human DNA as part of her existence. Mm-hmm. So she's much more than, she's more than a simulant, and she's more than a human. She's something else.
Right.
It's interesting to then butt this movie up against Blade Runner and talk about replicants and were replicants... they were born in a tank, but they were born from human DNA at some point, mm-hmm. right? They were engineering DNA and then fusing that. Well, they were doing mechanical stuff in other places, but at least I would assume with replicants that they were quote unquote flesh and blood through, all the way through. There wasn't an exoskeleton. There wasn't a metal skeleton on the inside underneath of the replicants.
Like the Terminator or something like that.
Exactly. Right? Yeah.
They weren't cyborg.
Right.
Huh. Interesting.
So, and grief. I mean, this movie had a lot to do with grief as well.
I thought the part when they told them that they couldn't pull the plug on her because they couldn't. Right.
Yeah. They're programmed.
Yeah. I thought that was like, man, okay. That's
heartbreaking. Yeah.
It was. It was so tough to watch because I cannot even imagine myself being put in a position where my loved one who I haven't seen for 5 years and I finally get to see him, and I have to let them go immediately.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, if they had ended more on that kind of note, that would have hit better, or it would have felt more bittersweet. But then instead they're like, oh no, actually we're going to go up and do a whole nother act in the air where we bring her back from the dead again and then kill both the parents off. Like, okay,
yeah, whatever. that was an attempt at a happy ending.
I guess like, they had a chance to talk, but
yeah, let's give them a happy ending. And it didn't work.
So in the interviews, they said that the central theme of the film was creation versus destruction.
Interesting. Right? Okay.
Yeah. So do you guys see that as a central theme, or I don't know.
It was grief. The primary character, John.
I agree with David.
David Washington was his character was driven by grief. Mm-hmm. And the only reason there's lots of attributable reasons, but for me, the emotional reason that he was trying to do this was to find his wife. And when that's how they get him engaged is like, hey, we got a hologram video thing of her. And he suddenly, I'm in. And then when he finds, that Alfie is, this child, and then he was supposed to be a father, but so all of his primary motivations for me came to about to grief. And so the whole fate of the world is this guy's dealing with the loss of, you know, his wife, who was his target, right, who he was supposed to go after and kill in the first place. So creation and destruction, I don't see those being played out in a grander scheme. Maybe I'm looking too big for those, and maybe it's maybe at a smaller scale. I don't know. Are you seeing that?
I guess it's there. We have
it's
the destruction.
Not there. Yeah.
Right. It's a destruction of all the one race or another, and versus the creation of this child that could maybe bring them all together in peace. But I don't know. It's just, yeah. It's just thin, as we said, it's just thin.
I didn't see creation and destruction at all.
Right.
I didn't see those themes at all. Yeah. I mean, you could have told a story of, you know, possibly creating a new society with demons and humans living, you know, peacefully. Could have told something like that where we're trying to, you have one side. It would have been interesting because normally in this type of movie, we get the machines are trying to end humanity.
Right. That's the standard.
And in this movie, we got humanity trying to end the machine. Mm-hmm. Where the machines are just trying to live their normal lives, and you know,
trying to do their thing.
They're not bothering nobody. You know, they never. They don't want any beef. They don't want any problems. They just want to chill. You know, in New Asia, whatever.
But your coding error, not ours.
Right.
you guys.
Here we have humanity hunting them down, where we normally have the opposite in these sorts of.
Right.
It's always the machines who are hunting humanity to the last breath, right? And here we have humans trying to eradicate the simulants, and it doesn't matter if other humans get caught up in the line of fire,
right?
So I didn't see any overarching theme of creation and destruction.
It could have been
too, but that's not what, like, they told.
You said the plot is too grounded in sort of real politics, as opposed to big creation, destruction.
I didn't see any of that.
All right. Well, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, we can play Spot the Tropes, and then we can read a little bit of feedback before we jump off.
Cool.
Okay. And we're back. All right. So while I was sitting in the theater by myself, mind you, I pulled out my phone and started writing down the names of other movies that I felt were present in some way, shape, or form in the movie that I was watching. So I sort of roughly called it Spot the Trope. And, you know, it's not necessarily other, you know, there's lots of different kinds of tropes, but these are more about the titles of films that I saw elsewhere. I think Alicia used it to
Spot the Tribute.
Is to spot the tribute. I picked out 16 titles that I could easily call out to see that there are plot elements or visual things that were the same. So I don't know if this sounds like a fun game or not. We can give it a try. And I told everybody to not share each other's lists so that we weren't sort of, you know, that we'd get a sort of a real-time review. So Alicia, how many did you pull up?
19.
19. John, did you have a count by chance? Or?
No, I'm looking at your 19. If we were playing a team sport, I would look at the coach and say, "Coach, put me on the bench right now." Because what's happening right now, I don't got the game for this. This is where I'm at. let's just get into it.
Okay.
19.
All right, Alicia, I posted mine into the outline. I don't know.
How many did you have, David?
16.
Oh my gosh.
So do you want to post yours in?
Sure.
Yeah.
But then, okay, so we'll see how many we have. I'm sure we have a good number in common.
In common, you have to.
Yeah. And we can just kind of breeze through these. We don't have to get too deep.
Yeah.
So why don't you all go down my list, and then if you've got the same one, Alicia, then you can cross it off, call it out, and then we'll see what's left, and then you can run through yours.
Okay.
So definitely got an Aliens vibe at several times when they were flying around in the chopper things. And I got Avatar. Where did I get Avatar? Was it
Avatar?
Water related stuff.
Avatar.
No, I know what it was. It was when Allison Janney and them were flying around in their choppers, because it was like the big bad general in Avatar when he was coming with his big, aircraft to attack the tree.
Can I say that was more Starship Troopers?
Okay, well, there's a good one. There's a good one. I don't have that on there. Okay, so we're going to put that on your list. Starship Troopers. What else did I have here? Avengers Age of Ultron, right? With the flying base thing, that was cruising around in the atmosphere. Blade Runner, obviously.
Yes, I had Blade Runner too. Yeah.
Okay. Chappie.
I had Chappie too.
Yeah, because that the robots, especially the police robots, they had a very similar vibe to that. This is an obscure film from when is Dark Star? Sci-fi film, 1974, about a ship that they cruise around and they blow up problem planets that are like unstable, and they have intelligent bombs. And so they have this whole problem with this one bomb that short circuits and wants to keep blowing up, but they have to keep talking it down. It's a really bizarre film. 1974, really super interesting.
Okay.
District 9, obviously.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Elysium, obviously.
Yeah.
Independence Day.
Okay, I see it.
Huh.
There was, where was Independence Day in? I think it was towards the end, maybe. Leon the Professional, when the police were storming the building and they were holed up in the apartment. In Leon the Professional, there's the cops are descending on the building.
Yeah.
Platoon, right? It had a very Vietnam War era vibe to the whole thing.
Okay.
Return of the Jedi. Why did I have Return of the Jedi in there?
Because she uses the Force, obviously.
Silent Running, another 70s era sci-fi movie about little walking robots and AI stuff. Star Trek, which one spoiler, Spock dies? Star Trek 2 or Star Trek 3 when they try to recover
Everybody Spock. Dies eventually.
Right. And so that got into the whole thing of Maya dying and, the saying goodbye.
Right.
And Westworld, obviously, with so it's 15 because I just had a general category for Vietnam. But
okay.
So Westworld. Yeah. So that's my 15.
Okay. Okay. So, yeah, in addition to the ones I had in common with you, also AI.
Oh, I didn't see that one. Okay.
And Humans, which also stars Gemma Chan, and she plays a robot who becomes, she ends up being taken in by a family to be the sort of like nanny housekeeper. But then it turns out she has a past and a memory that's been wiped.
Cool.
And obviously it's all about the line between human and artificial intelligence. Obviously we have to bring up Rogue One.
Mm-hmm. Good call.
Pinocchio, because of this whole like, I'm a real child thing.
That's a really good, I didn't even think of that. That's totally in line, right? Am I a kid or am I
going to heaven?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That whole thing. Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah. Yeah. So 1984, just because of like the whole bombing propaganda thing.
I like
and
it.
About, how can we dissolve love? And yeah, War of the Worlds, mostly because of the Nomad and then just visually.
Wait a minute. What do I see here? Wait a minute.
The show Alicia. That shall not be named.
Alicia. Wait a minute.
I'm naming it. I said Secret Invasion, LOL.
Oh, no.
We'll move on quickly
Jean
past that one.
He's mortally wounded.
We'll move on quickly. I will say that Secret Invasion does make this look like a better movie, as does the next one on the list, Oblivion, which I'd like to point out that Rotten Tomatoes in their summary calls visually striking but thinly scripted. So
there you go. I don't think I even saw Oblivion. I don't even recognize it.
Yeah, really? It's a 2013 Tom Cruise movie. Yeah.
Vaguely, I'm seeing him on this pod landing pad thing.
Yeah.
Did I watch it? Was that one? Watch Edge of Tomorrow instead. That's a much better
movie. Yeah, definitely.
All right. Yeah, Edge of Tomorrow is fun. I enjoy that a lot. Not only because I am a big she also played Mary Poppins in River Jungle.
Yes, yes. Oh my gosh, now I'm suddenly the wife of John Krasinski, Emily Blunt.
Yes, I'm a big Emily Blunt fan. She was my favorite in one of my very favorite movies of all time is The Devil Wears Prada. I think that's a perfect movie.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a good movie, yeah.
Okay.
It's tight. The script is tight.
Okay.
Works.
Okay.
So, anyway.
Yeah. So, yeah, next on the list was, I mentioned it earlier, Tales from the Loop, which I think both Oblivion and the creator got some visual cues from. And for anyone who's not familiar, it started as a series of books from a Swedish author and illustrator named Simon Stålenhag. And it's really like, you know, I've Swedish friends that I've had, you just walk into their home and they have it as art on their walls. It's a really popular thing. And it was turned into a tabletop game that I've gotten to play with some friends before. And also there was a TV adaptation on Amazon Prime. And it has just very iconic bare rural landscapes with like hulking machines floating over them. Very minimalistic steampunk.
Yeah, I've always been entranced by the art from Tales of the Loop. How was the show? Was that any good?
I mean, it would have been better, I think, if they had gotten another season because they kind of laid some mysteries that they didn't really get to address.
Uh-huh.
It was, as you would expect from a Swedish adaptation, it was slow and and thoughtful, you know.
Uh-huh.
So some episodes were better than others. Overall, I liked it. You know, if you're curious, I say give it a shot. They put a lot of the visuals on screen, but it asks more questions than it has time to answer.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've always loved the visuals of that. And yeah, I did note that there is a role-playing game version. So,
cool. Yeah, it was fun. If anyone wants to give that a go, it was a good time. And yeah, Ex Machina, for obvious reasons.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. Children of Men, which kind of has a similar thing where, you know, there's... It's Clive Owen is protecting, in this case, the only woman who can get pregnant. Yeah, it's such a good movie. Alfonso Cuarón is one of my favorite directors.
Sounds
great
familiar.
Great movie.
Yeah, but it's kind of, he's protecting this key to saving the world on this road trip sort of thing. And yeah, The Last of Us, because we've got, again,
good one.
You know, road trip, protecting, bonding.
Right. Right.
But this time they had to actually bond. No actual blood to cheat.
Right. Yeah, very, very lone wolf and cub.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. And yeah, the Terminator movies.
Oh, obviously. I can't believe I missed that.
Minority
three
Report.
Or how many is that in one? That's like you can 2x, 3x your entry there.
Yeah, Minority Report. I guess just because of the way that... see underneath the facade the government showing you. And yeah, iRobot for obvious reasons. Yeah.
Right. Good. John, what do you think about those?
I mean, you guys. you guys
it's fun. We're just having some fun.
You guys are great. You guys are
trying
great.
Something new.
I'm sticking with my Starship Trooper.
All right. Yeah,
that was
you're
a good
one
call.
On your list.
Those helicopter scenes.
It's one of the things that I'm noticing that's hard for doing this one shot too, is that, you know, when I saw the movie was it more than a week, 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago now, till the time that we got to record, we really got to, you know, I think if we can shorten our time between all watching it and then recording it, I think that would really help.
Yeah. But it was the time of Triple Blessings.
Yes. It was Triple Blessings. We are done with that now. Cool. All right. Well, that was fun. I hope everybody enjoyed that a little bit. We'll see in the future if we can, you know, pull something like that off again. So we got a couple of pieces of feedback. We've got two emails, one from Shane L., who is our newest Patreon subscriber. He also got the annual membership. So that's one thing that you can do is if you're interested in that, you can bill for a year. It makes things a little bit easier. So Shane wrote in, how was this movie made for only $80 million? !! Truly unbelievable. So I did a little research. And I think Shane is a bit of a film buff as well. I know that they were at the New York Film Festival and posting a bunch of photos on our Discord from being there. Shane quotes a quote from the director, Gareth Edwards. I took a camera and a 1970s anamorphic lens, which is a particular kind of lens that, oh, I forget. I looked this up before and I forgot what it does now. Somebody, Alicia, can you look that up for me really quick so we can quote that properly? Kate, we went location scouting in Vietnam, Cambodia, Japan, Indonesia, Thailand, and Nepal. Our whole plan was just to go to the greatest locations in the world because the cost of a flight is way less than the cost of building a set. We're going to hopscotch around the world and shoot this film, then layer in the science fiction on top afterwards. If our film is trying to achieve something visually, it's trying to feel real in the terms of science fiction. Huh. You got something on anamorphic there?
Yeah, it's basically when you shoot in a standard 35 millimeter film, but then kind of stretch the visuals to create a widescreen image.
That's right. Yeah. So you get a particular look from that where you can get really wide scenes without having to have a big super wide lens, which does a whole bunch of other weird stuff to it. Shane continues, he used this camera, a Sony FX3. So cool. Reminded me a bit of Apocalypse Now. Sure, the story had some overplayed Chosen One plots, but the visuals are incredible. He often shot on location with natural lighting and just four crew members on set. A lot of the extras in the movies weren't even aware a film was being made. So that's pretty cool details there. I think thin on plot, but great on execution, this story, you know.
Yeah.
This movie gets.
No, I mean, I definitely, please make more films. Just, you know, don't write them yourself.
Right. Get some different writing partners.
Yeah.
All right. Stu, aka Duve71, one of our Loremaster subscribers, wrote in as well. Stu says, hey, David, I've been looking forward to The Creator as I follow Gareth Edwards since his debut with the technically and visually amazing Monsters. I also enjoyed Godzilla, though that story was tissue thin, a bit of a theme, unfortunately. But again, his eye for an arresting image and great use of sound and music is compelling. I can't forget the scene where the paratroopers halo jump into the city through the clouds. Just stunning. So I think we got a trend going here with Edwards, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do.
Yeah. Good visually, but needs better writing partners. We all know the difficulties on Rogue One and the need for Tony Gilroy to reshoot, but I, for one, would like to have seen his full vision, which was more Dirty Dozen heist. That's a World War II era film, which is great. It's on my list of old man movies that I'm making John watch for our second breakfast coverage. It stars Lee Marvin, and he takes a group of military convicts and they lead a behind the enemy lines type of raid. Which was more Dirty Dozen heist than Guns of Navarone, which is another classic World War II movie about blowing up some big guns, German big guns behind enemy lines. Then we got in the final film, which is among my top three Star Wars movies. So with all that in mind, I was looking forward to The Creator as the trailer definitely hit my sweet spot for sci-fi, AI, robots, battle scenes, and a central mystery of the child, right? So this is where I was super excited. It had all the things that I would love in a film like this. And they did a really great job of teasing it, you know, before we actually got to the movie theater. Stu continues, without going into the film too much, that's what the one-shot pod is for. Some of the things I really loved was just the amount of world building done without endless exposition dumps. Yeah, it was really light on exposition.
For better or worse, yeah.
For better or worse. They just took us right into the world and they'd take us, I'll give it credit for that, they took us right into the story, right?
Right. But they created the world visually more than, you know, explaining it to us.
It's true. Stu continues, you understood the position of the West after LA was nuked. The only thing a bit underbaked was the fact that New Asia just let Nomad nuke sovereign territory with no repercussions, only dealt with by a very limp. We have no quarrel with the people, just the AI. This was a plot hole that was so big, it kind of devalued the brilliant and visually stunning scenes in New Asia that showed AI was an intrinsic part of their society. Jean, thoughts?
Yeah, no. The idea that there were no repercussions was spot on. That's absolutely true, but I stand by wanting to see more out of non-Western locality.
Right.
You know, I want to see more dynamic places and peoples, and we can show how fully invested and how fully integrated the AI and the peoples of Asia were without having them in some sort of rural, you know, community.
Oversimplified, over-idyllic.
Yeah.
All right. Stu continues. I was continually impressed with the lived-in feel of the world and the Blade Runner-esque cityscape visuals. Yeah. Edwards knows how to do big vistas and images that will stick in the brain. Agreed. He definitely has a compelling visual style. He nailed a world where AI is every day, and it was interesting. It was an interesting choice to show AI in Asia in an Asian setting, especially the spiritual aspects to reinforce that these were sentient beings, not just machines. So slightly counter to your point there, Jean, about that. I think maybe that was intentional, right? To show.
No, I know it was intentional.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not saying it wasn't.
No, you're saying it wasn't. Right.
Yeah. I know it was intentional. I just don't like the intention.
Fair enough. The Spec Ops teams led by a gloriously scene-chewing Allison Janney. Yeah, she was chewing the scenery, that is for sure. Helped drive the story on, and the actor playing the child was just right and pushed the emotional beats when needed. I did not like the crazy military guys, bruh, you know, the whole sort of screaming over the top stuff. Those dudes are calm and cool and collected. They are not roughshod like that. I don't know. It just
strikes me.
And it
would be eerier if they were calm and
collected. Calm and collected, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It would be much scarier. American Psycho-like.
Yeah. Right. And that's a caricature, right? We're playing again with that caricature.
Right.
Wraps up. It wasn't the satisfying three-course meal I was hoping for, but instead was the tasty burger that will, quote-unquote, just do. I want to see more of Edward's visions on the big screen. Just think he needs a tip-top writer to sort out his plot issues. Namaste, Stu. All right, well, there we go.
We all
agree.
Yes. Alicia's tribute. I like it.
Yeah.
So, cool. Well, let's wrap this up. Thanks, guys, for jumping in on this. It's more fun when there's a film that we all like to talk about, but I think it's...
There's a lot of interesting stuff that comes out of this film, and I think... Even if we're not like singing its praises from the rafters, right? That's the word.
Yes, it happens when you podcast, like, man. Your brain.
Yeah. I'm like, raptors? I don't know. No, that's dinosaurs.
Well, now you've got the nomad, right? Because the nomad was a
exactly. Bird of prey. I would tepidly recommend it. I would just recommend, it's like, watch it, but keep in mind, it's, you know, it's for the visuals and the sound.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Pick it up on a matinee on a big screen, or when you've got streaming, turn out the lights and put on some earbuds or some headphones or something and sync into it.
Oh, it'd be great with headphones.
Yeah.
For sure.
You have good bass.
I'll probably watch it again on streaming. I probably will. I think I'd like to sit with the visuals a little bit more.
Yeah, so would I.
Yeah. Cool. All right, well, let's wrap it up here real quick. Quick shout out to Properly Howard Movie Reviews, one of our affiliate podcasts. Anthony and Steve do movie reviews, and this season they've been doing a bunch of remakes. They just did one on the 1982 John Carpenter classic, The Thing. Great choice for Spooktober. I watched it. I rewatched it based on their podcast recently. It was a lot of fun. Next week, they'll be dropping The Sorcerer, a 1977 remake. And they did a bunch of stuff. The Departed, Wicker Man, Wolfman, RoboCop, Dune. Alicia and I were on that Dune podcast. Mm-hmm. And they did did White Man Can't Jump. So it's been a hilarious season, a lot of fun. And did either of you listen to The Thing podcast yet?
No, not that one yet. Okay. But I like the movie, so I'm definitely going to listen.
Yeah, it's definitely a good movie, and it's a good podcast for it. Alicia, you are getting back into the swing of things on Wool Shift Dust. You have plans within plans within plans, I think.
So that basically the things coming up are have to do with there's going to be some cross-pod coverage on the Fall of the House of Usher, which
I love it.
Was just released on streaming as we record. And yeah, there's also going to be some ongoing coverage after that of Beacon 23, the next Hugh Howey adaptation to come out. And yeah, and there will also be intermittently, we'll be covering the Dune things in between the other things, building up to whenever the release date is going to be now.
Right. Did they kick it again?
Well, no, it's just, we'll see. We'll see. Things have taken a sour turn in the actor negotiations.
Yeah. So if SAG-AFTRA drags out and I don't think that they will release Dune 2 without actors doing promo.
I think if they were going to do that, they should have done that when they were going to do it in November, you know. So.
Right. Well, you can't have Zendaya in a film and then not have Zendaya promoting the film, right? If you're thinking from a studio standpoint, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to go see it regardless. Doesn't matter what, you know, Timothy Chalamet and Zendaya do. We're seeing it. But I think to get big audience like they really want, I think they need some star power to get the word out. So awesome. Well,
then they better start negotiating again. Yeah,
That's right. Quick shout out to our Patreon lore masters. They're our top tier lore masters. They help keep the lights on and keep us all, you know, happy and spiritually and financially sort of better off than we were if we didn't have them. So Samarshan, Cyrus, Mark H., Michael G., Michelle E., David W., Brian P., Nick W., SC, Peter O., H., Bettina W., Adam S., Nancy M., Lavinia T., Duve 71, Brian 8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Gareth C, Eric F, Matthew M, Sarah M, DJ Miwa, Andra B, Kwang Yu, Laura G, Deadeye Jedi Bob, Nathan T, Alex V, Aaron T, Sub-Zero, and Adrian. Woo! 32 names. That is incredible. So thank you all so very much. And again, if you're interested in supporting what we do, check us out on Patreon. $3 a month. You can do a 7-day free trial. You can also do an annual subscription if that works for you. And we've got a bunch of exclusive benefits there. We've got our second breakfast podcast. We do some live watches. We've got some areas on the Discord where folks can chat. So, and we're coming up with some more things. Anyway, that's enough of that. John, Alicia, I guess we'll, it's a Loki tonight, right? In about half an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah. At this point, I'm just going to stay up and watch it.
Okay. Thanks for staying up.
Thank you so much, Alicia, for doing this.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
It's good fun.
No, I want to watch Loki live. Last week, I was like dodging spoilers.
Oh, right, right. Yes, exactly. Until you, and you had some other stuff going on in your life, so you couldn't get right around to it immediately, I think.
Right.
So. Well, I might have said, love you, Mom. I'm going to watch Loki.
Right. All right, guys. Well, we'll see you on the Loki podcast, which should be out in a few days. Thanks. Good night.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.